Hey, Jamie, I've got a question for you.
What do you want, Tom?
Who's on the podcast this coming Friday? Is it someone big?
Boy.
Is it a big one? Shall I bother listening this week?
Yeah. If I was going to say take.
And I would say off.
No.
Your trousers.
No, no. Take.
Me out.
No. Take.
Paddy McGuinness.
No. Take.
Take on me.
Take that.
Wow.
Have a little patience.
But hang on, presumably you haven't got all three of them, have you? Presumably you've just got one of them.
Buddy, we have all three of them on the podcast. They've released a new album. It's coming out. They're going on tour. They talk about the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, on everything that happened in Take That.
The ins, the outs.
And they reveal it all this Friday.
Exclusively.
On Private Parts.
That's a big one. I'm going to listen to that.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Whole Truth Podcast. I'm here with my good friend Scroobius Pip. I have been on his podcast, which is incredibly successful.
Yeah, it's doing all right.
I can only dream of this being as successful. And as what's the word when you do loads of them? Prolific,
yeah. I've done one every week for over 4 years now.
It's good.
I like it.
You've done more podcasts than I've washed my clothes.
That's impressive, right?
Not for me. So, yeah, and you've had some phenomenal guests on there. And I think one of the most interesting aspects of your podcast, which we're not going to do here because I'm presenting it, is that you don't edit it.
Yeah, I don't edit. I've only realised, it's mad this, because this is something I've not talked about. I've done a thing recently for the BBC, for the British Stammering Association, because I've got a stutter.
Really?
And I've always been fine with it, and I leave it in there, it's unedited.
I think it's an incredible, important part of, it's an integral part of Scroobius Pip, isn't it?
Completely, but it's a mad one that just going over a lot of the stutter stuff, because my stutter is something I don't really think about. I'm generally like, I don't like to make it a big deal. I don't think it should be a big deal. I think it should just be considered an accent.
Yeah.
I don't think we should be doing all this to try and cure a stutter. It's like, you're not broken. It doesn't need to be fixed.
Yeah.
We just need to be okay with people stuttering. It shouldn't be a big deal. But I realise that that's part of the reason I don't edit my podcast, because if I had to sit there and listen to it all, it'd break me. Just going, oh, I didn't know I was stuttering at that point. Or,
really?
Do you know what I mean?
I
think it'd do me in a bit. So I think it's a subconscious artistic choice.
Your stutter changed in any way?
It was a lot worse when I was a kid. I have periods now where, I have people who've known me ages who don't realise I've got a stutter, because in the right moment, I'm just chatting and not stuttering. But the podcast has been a mad one for that, because I had 10 years of doing music and all this other stuff, and I don't stutter like when I rap, or I never particularly stuttered on stage or any of this kind of thing. So as soon as I started doing the podcast, I was having people constantly being like, what happened? Like, when did you get a stutter? I was like, no, I've always had a stutter. I guess.
Does it trace? Are there any? Do they ever trace stutters to something?
Yeah, man,
to
it's dark. It's often, again, I've been learning a lot more about it in these last few weeks, because I did a thing called a Lifeline appeal on the BBC, and it's on iPlayer and stuff like that.
Amazing.
It'll be on iPlayer until the end of the year, I think. But the popular theory is that it comes from a traumatic event.
Right.
And I learned that mine came from when I was four, almost drowned in France.
No.
And I got swept out to sea, and water was going in my mouth constantly. My dad came out and saved me, and it was all good. But that supposedly was the kind of latent thing that gave me my stutter.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's quite... that's a lot. I mean, it's very tangible, I feel,
a
connection.
Yeah.
It's almost like you're there, still there.
Oh, what I love is that, I mean, this discussion and podcast is often
about. Do you swim now? Sorry.
Yeah, I swim. I like it now. I didn't, as for a long time as a kid, I didn't swim. I avoided it. I was like, no, I'm not up for that. But yeah, I just find the mind a fascinating thing. Like, again, it's, I've got comfortable with my stutter, but the fact that we don't really, like, we can understand that that's a trigger point, but we don't really, no one really understands what a stutter or a stammer is.
Yeah.
And things I've found in recent years.
It's like a neurological thing, like a pathway.
It's, yeah, it's meant to be a neurological thing, but it's unclear how or why.
Right.
And a thing that I found in recent years, and this is like a, if it feels like a party a trick now, but I stutter on the name of the comedian, Dylan Moran. I struggle to say Dylan Moran. It's something I get stuck on, but I got taught a tapping technique of syllables. So if I say Dylan Moran, Dylan Moran, and tap the syllables out on my arm, Dylan Moran, I can say Dylan Moran, but if I don't, I can't. How crazy is the brain?
Yeah, that is literally mental. Right? That is literally mental.
But again, I guess it's a distraction thing or a rhythm thing.
Dylan Moran. Again, I'm also just happy we get to Dylan Moran a lot. I do like Dylan Moran.
Yeah, I just say, can't say, I had him on the podcast. I thought we were going to have this huge connection over it. He didn't care. All right. Genuinely. I told this whole story. I was like, I almost drowned on this. He was like,
cool.
Uh-huh.
Oh, for God's sake. Like, but it's like, it's hard for him to not be in character, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. It was the most awkward podcast I've done.
Scroob, very honoured to call you a friend. I've done work together in the past. I do also remember probably having my most incredible DJ set at the Bedroom Bar, where I did put on Backstreet's Back.
Yeah, it went off.
Straight after Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
And the crowd went nuts.
Can't lie. King Kunta into Backstreet's Back.
Yeah, no mixing.
No.
Just, you know, fading in and out. Doesn't matter.
Classic.
It's what the people want. You actually, your name first entered into my world. I might have said this on your podcast, but I can't remember. There's a music teacher of mine called Mr. Greville, and he is a prime example of, like, I'd say a kind of radical teacher.
Yeah.
You know those ones who are like, in your mind, they've walked into the room and they're like, you know what? F the books.
Yeah.
You know what? Fuck the curriculum.
Yeah.
Like, watch, throw it out. And I remember he in one class, but I'm pretty sure we're learning music theory.
Yeah.
Right, so that's like Sibelius and like notes and that.
Yeah.
Quavers, whatever they're called. What are they called? Quivers.
Yeah, quavers.
Quavers.
Semi-quavers.
Right, that's quavers. I just realised they're crisps. Anyway.
Yeah.
So
I guess it's because the crisps are shaped like kind of like a
really?
Quaver. Yeah. They are, aren't they, though?
So we were in that music theory lesson and he sat us down, Oh, actually, it was extracurricular. I can't lie. Sorry, it's extracurricular music. Yeah. So he can go a little bit off the rails. I think we can even wear our own clothes.
He can go there,
It was mad. And he sat us down and he was like, right, bang. And he played Thou Shalt Always. And he was like, and that last line. For those of you who don't know, you were in a duo, Dan Lesak.
Yes.
And Scroobius Pip. And you had a good few years of limelight at a point when I wouldn't say that spoken word is as palatable as it is.
No, it was right when, or there was no demand at all for spoken word at that point. That's why it was weird that Thou Shalt got in the top 40 and then all this other stuff. A Letter from God to Man was another one that was in the top 40 that it's straight up, it's a spoken, it's over a beat or whatever,
poetry.
But it's not like verse chorus or anything like that. It's like, here's,
well,
here's,
you actually adamantly, aggressively take that down.
Yeah.
That should not make repetitive generic music. That should not make repetitive generic music. That should not make repetitive generic music.
Exactly.
But it was the last line, which was, I think, which is the center point, the shock, the theatrical climax, which is Thou Shalt Always Kill.
Yeah.
And I remember my music teacher was like, it's just, you know, the depth, because I suppose we will, but, you know, it really made an impact.
The beauty of coming into a pop world with a seeming kind of intellectual angle, which again, I didn't do great at school or anything. It's mad. Like, I've had a load of different songs of mine used in classes in schools.
It's crazy.
But it means that people then, I always think David Lynch, I love him, but I always think he puts a load of stuff in there that he doesn't know what it means. And then his fans go, here's what it means, and over intellectualize it.
Yeah,
and
trust
that
me.
Always Kill was, one of them, which was great, because the main keys is the line before that is "Thou shalt think for yourselves."
Yeah.
And that was the key one, because it's after I spent 3 minutes telling you what you should do.
Yeah.
I'm
then
saying, but ignore all of that. So I then had people saying, oh, but this contradicts this and this contradicts this.
I'm like, of course it does.
Yeah, but that's because I've got the thing. That's the point. It's not about actually preaching. And "Thou shalt always kill" was genuinely just like you kill a gig.
Yeah.
You kill a gig, or you kill a verse, or you kill a show. And then it became all these different things, because people were like, well, it's this and it's humanity and all that. I'm like, yeah, it's that as well.
I interpret it like that. All right, Scroob.
Yes.
So established how I know you, how I heard you and all that. I need to ask you straight up how you are. And I need to ask you genuinely how you are.
Mm-hmm. I'm good, you know. It's a weird one, because in the last... This year is the first year... I've always been someone who's a big believer in taking control of your own emotions.
Right.
That we've got a level of control over this. But equally, as you were touching on earlier, that happiness isn't the only emotion that we need to experience, or happiness shouldn't be the only goal or thing that we strive to. So
yeah,
I have ups and downs, but I always feel, in general, they're reasonable. It's on a reasonable axis, if you know what I mean. I'm not going too far one way. But this year is the first year I had a week or so of being a bit... of losing that control a little bit and being a bit spun. And it's because of all this stuff I've been doing about stutters. Because, again, it was a weird one. Before we were rolling, we were talking about kind of... You see, I'm stuttering more now I'm talking about it. We were talking about humble brags and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had this weird thing where, in the same week of preparing for this BBC thing, I had a guy who's doing a book on speech impediments, and he highlighted to me that when I had my XFM show, The Beatdown, and I openly stuttered on it, it's the first time in broadcast history, apparently, that someone has... openly and uneditedly stuttered. I was like, it's part of the show. We're pre-recording, but we're not going to retake. It's just this. And things like that, whilst it was meant as a, man, congratulations, you've done a good thing there, I didn't think about it at the time. And if you think about stuff like that, you're then liable to start thinking about what restrictions there are on you as an individual. So I had a week or so thinking, right, my podcast is doing good, but... is it as big as it's ever going to get? Because that's the most amount of people who will be willing to listen to someone who's got a stutter every week.
No.
Or on the acting front, is my acting's been going great? Am I kind of at a plateau? Generally not. I can generally get it under control. But again, it's the weird thing is, I started to then think, because I don't always notice it, I was like, have I been stuttering at half of these auditions? Is the reason I didn't get that role that I adored because I stuttered? I thought I smashed it, but I'm in there going... you know,
right.
So I had a week or so of kind of facing that kind of stuff.
And
I don't normally do that.
And do you think it's just because you spent so much time talking about
it? It's because it had become a focus, and it is something that whilst
that's tough,
I've never shied away from it. I don't want it to be something that people feel awkward talking to me about. That's kind of the point of it, is that it shouldn't be a big deal. But yeah, it was that. I think I had a week or so where it was such a focus that it made me start thinking again. And it was because of people being nice. It was because of people saying, you've done so well, kind of with the unspoken bit being, you've done so well considering. Do you know what I mean? That made me kind of feel, right, is this the most I can do? By chance, I had a chance, an unplanned hangout with my mum. Just as it was all happened, I spoke to her, and it helped me kind of figure it out a little bit. It helped me kind of clear my head on it all.
Yeah.
And it was, again, it was that good thing of good to talk to someone. It happens that my mum has worked at the Samaritans for years, so she knows about talking to people or just listening to people.
Do you see a therapist?
No, I never have. It's a weird one. I talk about it a lot. I recommend it a lot. I think... the mental health issues we have at the moment are huge, but I also think they're often amplified by almost
labels.
The demonization of it, or the fact that because I get down sometimes, but it's normally because something bad has happened. For me, that isn't a problem. That's a natural reaction.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing. I think we are now quick to go, oh, you need to get that fixed. Do you know what I mean? You're suffering from depression, you need to get that fixed. It's like, well, no, it's... If it's a...
There's a difference between depression and sadness.
Yeah, exactly. A reasonable reaction to having a bad month or two, I'm kind of okay with that. I don't feel I've ever got to the point where I'm depressed. Oh. I said I've been sad.
Listen,
I've been just middling for a long time, all those kind of things, but yeah.
Well, that's good.
But it is something, I said, it's something I've had to think about because it's something I push so much on the podcast that people should get help, should...
I just think therapy
or Samaritans or all these other things, calm, all these...
You don't I feel like you don't necessarily need to have an issue to do therapy. I think therapy is just like... Yeah, I mean, people usually go, especially men, usually go at like a crisis point.
Yeah.
Like the idea of just figuring out what motivates you or what you need.
Yeah, some guidance. But
it sounds like you've managed to create healthy methods of processing. I know that you...
Yeah.
Exercise a lot and
you're
very routine based.
Yeah, completely. I think all those things help. I think also I benefit from, it's weird because again, it's not something I talk about loads. I've got an older brother who's got his master's in philosophy, is very clever and has got a lot. Do you know what I mean? So he's a really good leveling point.
Wow.
He's kind of the person who kind of taught me that it's not all about, again, it confused, like anytime he brings it up to my parents, they get confused completely. But his point is that happiness is great, but it's not the only emotion or only goal.
100% not.
And again, I think the fact that we perpetuate that in society a lot ends up being damaging, because then you feel, oh, if you're not beaming with happiness, I'm losing at life.
It's the linchpin of consumerism, that, isn't it? It's how you control people.
This will make you happy. Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, I know, it's sad that. I know what you mean completely. And I think that's what something I suppose the I'm Whole campaign and the things around it is wanting to, my idea of destigmatizing or opening up the language around it is to not feel as though that you have to be what we consider to be normal. Do you know what I mean? Like that actually feeling sad's cool. And I do know what you mean. I think we have to be careful. I think we have to be careful or conscious as we evolve and become more aware of things.
Yeah.
That we don't manifest things. That's another, I don't want people to run around grabbing labels so that there's,
completely.
So they can hide behind them.
It's the fine balance. Because again, I think it's great that there's a greater awareness and discussion of all of these things. I think that's not only great, crucial.
Yeah.
It's crucial that there's awareness. So I feel completely the same. And I worry that by saying, are we grabbing at these terms we've heard?
I think it's we shouldn't pendulum, talk about, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean?
It's like a pendulum thing. And I think that's why... So say, for example, of Music for Mental Health, we're collaborating with Calm, who you do a lot of work with, The Mix and YMCA. And I think that's, for me, that's the most honest way of looking at it, is that I remember what the YMCA Youth Club was like when I was a kid. And I remember the youth workshop I went to, Audio Active and whatever else. And when you're young, you are experiencing these different emotions and it's just having someone support you through experiencing them. And that, I think, is the healthiest way to look at it. It's not saying let's all huddle around each other and discuss why we're never going to get out of bed. It's not that at all. It's actually, I had a friend of mine, I hope he doesn't mind me saying, I won't say his name, but was over at my flat last night. He actually locked himself out. And he's my neighbour.
Yeah.
And, really, he's a hardworking boy, balanced life. But he, from what I understand, was grieving, do you know what I mean? And because one of his grandparents passed. And, I said, how are you feeling? He's like, I've kind of had a bit of a weird two or three days. And my first thing was like, it's absolutely fine. Do you know what I mean? And to be honest, he wasn't actually trying to contest it. But it was one of these wonderful moments where I just got to look at a human being. He was just going through a phase, of course.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I love that. I love what you said there of having people to help see you through these times. So rather than say we're going to solve it or be a solution. Have you ever seen the film Harvey?
No.
It's my favourite film of all time. It's a Jimmy Stewart film. And
I'm going to put it down so I make sure.
I make note. And it feels like it's as relevant now as it was when it was made in like the 50s or whatever, because it's about a guy who's clearly got some mental health issues. He's a bit delusional. And it's about a guy, as I said, he's got some mental health issues. He's got his best friend is an imaginary 6-foot rabbit.
Brilliant.
And all this. And it's about his family trying to get him into a mental home. And it goes around to the point where you're going, well, he's happy with the way his mind is at the moment. He's in a happy place. If we fix him, he's going to be in a miserable place. Yeah. Our solution is to make him sad and miserable like the rest of us, rather than just cope with or, handle the happy, peaceful person he is. He's got a line in it which I sampled illegally on one of my first tracks, where he says, my mum used to say to me, in this world, Elwood, you can be oh so smart or oh so pleasant. For years I was smart, I recommend pleasant. Wow. And it's just the most beautiful, like there's tons of just beautiful moments like that. And it really feels like a film. Like as soon as I started, or before I was getting into acting, I was like, at some point I want to get to a point where I get to remake Harvey. Because it feels just so prevalent for now that we're trying to diagnose everything and medicate everything rather than say, right, well, this person's different. How are they different? Is it damaging to them? Yeah. Is it damaging to us? Do we need to fix them, or do they need fixing?
It's just tools. Yeah. The way I look at it is we're trying to create toolkits.
Yeah.
And it's the difference between how I feel in myself after having started therapy and done various bits of research and understanding, and of course with his campaign, you know, is that now when I feel a type of way, I know what I need to do.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, and I just want as many people as possible to understand that, especially men, especially young men, because still, even in my friendships with boys who I love, adore, there's a natural rhythm that we're not used to, and I start to realize why I have so many girl mates because of that kind of, guys are I think one could generalize and say they do is just open up to women, whether they're seeing them or not.
That's true.
I know guys, I know there's also a generalization of boys being boys with their boy mates, but I do, even in that context, you then think when they do meet a girl, it's like,
here's all my stuff. It's finding the ways to be open with your mates, or be the person that your mates can be open with. I had one a few months back where a mate of mine hit me up, and it was clear he was kind of having a rough time, and we went for a walk, which seems ridiculous in this day and age. Like, we didn't go to the pub. I said, let's go for a walk, mate. And we walked for like 2 hours, and we just chatted got through all of it. And it was amazing. It was perfect. And I think if we'd gone and sat somewhere, we would have just talked about the news, or about this, or about that. Or if we'd come around and played computer games, we might not have got to that point. Because we just went and walked, there was no feeling of anyone listening in, because we're constantly on the move. Do you know what I mean? It was just this beautiful, out in the open, and nothing felt too heavy.
Were you both naked?
We weren't at the start. Or at the end, but in the middle.
I love that.
Because that was it, because both of us were like, well, we're not, neither of us are particularly big drinkers anymore. And it's such a male thing to, oh, should we go to the pub and have a chat? It's like, well, if you don't go to pubs much, does that remove your opportunity to talk to your friends?
Mate, do you know what I'm saying? Or drink. I've been sober as well. It's been wild. Like.
Exactly. That's it. It's that thing of finding ways to go, right, it's not, the pub isn't the reason we're getting together. It just happens to be the societal location that we tend to go to. Let's just go for a walk. Let's go out in London, or do whatever.
Mate,
you know, it doesn't have to be, we're going to the pub, or we're not meeting up.
Totally. That's what, that's one of the, like I say, with the toolkit is I'm now learning to not be so hard on myself, to not judge what I do, to not like be annoyed at myself. A lot of my issue would be like, say I do drink again, or say I do, eat a dodgy meal or whatever else. I'm a person who has the capacity to be like, now you're going to feel like this. Now this is wrong. Now this is going to be a domino effect for the rest of your life. Imagine if you had eaten that salad, not that burger, then in 20 years, you'd be happy. Yeah. But now I have this beautiful thing with a dog. It's the dog that's provided this. Some people are disciplined enough to not need a dog for this, but I have this wonderful dog, Spike. And it's literally like, even last night, I was in a mood, mate. Do you know what I mean? I was actually in a mood. I was actually sulking, which is a specifically male thing, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was on the phone to my girlfriend. I was being awful. Not like awful, like, you know, awful. I was very clear of the fact that I was in a sulky mood.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But it was one of these things where I think she said something like, very like, so I was just thinking about how ridiculous it is. But she said something very like sweeping about something, and I was like, "What?"
So you want to know that's not the
game. What do you mean? You're being like, you're definitely exaggerating. We had this back and forth. And I said to her, "You know what? I'm just gonna have to just get a bit of sleep and find in the morning." Yeah. And I had this beautiful thing which I've never had before. Well, I struggled with most of my life when I went to sleep knowing that I'd feel better in the morning because I had the tools.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm like, I'm going to draw a line under it tonight, and tomorrow morning, wake up, I'm going to take the dog for a walk, I'm going to have a good breakfast with proteins and with a good coffee, and I'll get to speak to the Scroobius Pip tomorrow. Yeah. And that was like, that lifted me.
It's wicked. I said, it really is. And the key there is that it's, everyone wants...
By the way, my girlfriend was totally fine. She had a good night too. I double check. Yeah, I text her in the morning. She's wonderful.
Everyone wants there to be a one size fits all toolkit, and that's not the case, particularly with mental health. It's so personal, and you need to find those things that are right for you. Manage. Even with, as we talked about, therapy and stuff like that. I've known people who've walked away from therapy. Because the first person that they happened to go in with, it wasn't the right fit.
Yeah,
and I think it's such a scary and dangerous thing because it is also personal. It's not like, oh, you go to the doctors and they've got a list of things that here's how to fix you. It's like you have to find that connection.
Yeah. So
it's worth going a few times. Equally, if you're like, well, my solution is going to be I play this certain song, and the first few times that song works and then all of a sudden it stops working.
Mm.
That doesn't mean you're out of tools. Like, there's more tools out there. You just need to find the right ones.
Exactly. Yeah. And people, like I say, people deal with it differently. And I think a reason why it's so important to have people on the ground with this stuff is because anxiety and depression, anxiety in a more extreme form, because obviously everyone does have anxiety. It's when it becomes an overload. They work against you. Do you know what I mean? So it is important for people to understand what's needed, because when you're anxious and depressed at the same time, it's quite difficult to get through. It's quite difficult for people to get through to you because I feel as though, I say you, when I've been anxiety, when I've had anxiety and depression at the same time, I find it quite difficult to be spoken to because they're working against each other. The anxiety means that I need to breathe.
Yeah.
And the depression goes, well, just don't move for the rest of the day then.
Yeah.
But when there's a space in which people, it doesn't feel like people are threatening me. You know, when people go like, oh, mate, just go for a jog. I'll be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What are you telling me to go for a jog for? What, is it going to cure me? Yeah. Go a jog. But it's only...
I've not heard of jogs before. I don't know about jogging, mate.
Do you know what I mean? But actually, if someone had probably said, go for a walk.
Yeah.
Or I could have turned it into a jog or whatever
else. It's the thing that clicks. And again, it's also, I think there's a massive importance in what you did last night of allowing it. Like not beating yourself up over it. I had Gizzy Erskine on my podcast. She's great, and she was talking about, it became a big news story that she was going to go to the Cure Awards, and the dresses that she'd been sent, none of them fit because she'd put on some weight over the last month or two, and she didn't go to the Cure Awards, and it was this big dramatic decision. And I kind of asked her, which apparently not many people had asked her, I was like, but how was your night? And she was like, oh, I had a great night. Because I didn't have the pressure of going to the Cure Awards and feeling awkward and feeling ugly. I met up with a mate of mine. We went to a restaurant. Had a really nice time. And it made me think of, I remember just at one time, I was on the way into London for some kind of event. And on the way there, it's one of the few times I don't get that anxious, but it was one time that anxiety just got me. I got on the train into London at Fenchurch Street. I got off and got the train back. And sent messages saying, oh, the trains have been messed up or whatever. But I then had a really nice and relaxed night at home. I watched some films. I got a takeaway. And the fact is that anxiety stopped me. I allowed that anxiety at the right time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If I'd forced myself to go through the other night that I was clearly anxious about and was clearly going to be uncomfortable for me and unenjoyable, I kind of allowed it at the right point to go, look, just leave it and we'll go home and we'll look after
me. Self-care above everything.
Yeah, we'll look after me and I'll have a nice night of, I'll get the takeaway I want, I'll get some ice cream in, I'll play some games or whatever. And that, again,
not
that's okay.
Ice cream, though,
it's, yeah, exactly. It's the fact of not beating yourself up about or seeing those things as failures.
Yeah.
Because it's not. It's your body has told you you need to look after yourself at this point rather than what you perceive as your duties or responsibility, you know, in public or in, you know, in these situations, in social situations. You think I'm in love with a singer, yeah, but I want to get
richer. Life threw me a bag of lemons, no wonder I'm bitter. Actually, now having heard a large part of your journey, when would you say you'd first started to consider your mental health?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Probably, I mean, I'm going straight in with a deepness here.
Please.
But the first time it properly was something I was aware that I needed to be aware of was at the age of 21 when my mate Jamie took his own life.
Right.
And it was horrendous at the time. He'd had a lot of mental health issues. He'd been misdiagnosed, in our opinion, with the particular medication he'd been put on. It made him more paranoid and stuff like that.
Oh, no.
And it was tough, but it was something that over time I proper respected. The fact that, and again, this is his story to tell, but he can't. But I've talked about it a few times, but he took his life on his 21st birthday. And at the time that felt the dark, horrendous, heavy. But with hindsight, I get and respect someone saying, if this isn't working out for me, I'm going to set a date of how long I can handle this. Do you know what I mean? If they're struggling and going, look, this is selfish of me to say, I wish he had lived on longer in misery, in pain, in darkness. I grew to accept and respect the fact that he went, look, that's the date. If I've not fixed it by then, I'm drawing a line under it. And again, I don't agree with it. I wish he hadn't, but
I've heard you,
understanding on that.
I watched you at the Garage with Kate Tempest about 6 years ago.
Yeah, a while back.
And there's a poem in that which is quite the contrary.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a sort of quite angry a piece it. Called a Magician's Assistant, and it's the reason I get a lot of messages from people who've been down, and 99% of the messages I've had about that song, if not more, have all been positive. I've had one or two saying it's, you know, it's aggressive, it's angry. But the point of that track or piece,
yeah, please explain.
It's basically saying that in those moments, understandably, you feel it's all about you, and that piece is just to highlight the other people it's about as well.
Yeah.
That when you draw that line, it's your sister who then has to continue on,
yes.
Or your parents who then, or your friends who then have to continue on. And that's not, it's not meant to be guilt tripping anyone. It's simply stating here's what it is. Because I know that
I
when you're in those moments,
trip.
All you can think of is your.
But I don't think that's a guilt trip at all. No. I think it's a really necessary conversation because to the same extent as we don't want to disrespect the dead or feel as though someone was wrong for ever making a decision. But I really think there is a continuity between the high levels of suicide with men, mm-hmm. and the information we're fed about our own idea of self, yeah, in that we're so not used to emotional strain as well, as, mm-hmm, it, like you say, over a long period of time,
yeah,
or given the tools to deal with it. I just, there's the, like, this intimacy. That's exactly what it is. It's the intimacy,
yeah,
you know? And I remember in some, like, TV show, which, you know, amidst, it was, like, really, oh, it was Sherlock. It was,
right, yeah,
in
yeah,
a series of Sherlock, which, you know, we aren't getting into discussion of Sherlock. I thought towards the end of it, I thought it got a bit watered down for this manner. No, but seriously, there was one scene where someone is experiencing these suicidal thoughts and Sherlock's character turns around and goes, oh, you know, well, it's, you know, it's my life, I can do what I want with it. And he says, it's not your life.
Mm.
It's, yeah, like, yeah, he determines that it's not your life, it's everyone who knows you, or something like that. And amidst this kind of essentially kind of action-packed adventure,
yeah,
that line stayed with me, man. Because I think that's what you touched on back then.
Yeah, again, it's
and there's somewhere in between.
It's funny because there's another episode of Sherlock that when it came out, a lot of people said, that's exactly like one of your songs. So I reckon the Sherlock writers are just fans, you know, because...
Maybe it is the same song.
I'm sure it isn't. They're amazing writers. But
in
that song, yeah, it ends with saying, it's your life. Like the repeated part is, it's your life. It's your choice, your life, so on and so forth. But on the last reprise of that, it says, it's your choice, it's your life, it's your sister, it's your parents,
yeah,
it's your mother. So it is still the your... But there's a lot of other people that are tied into that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, yeah.
And it's understanding that it's so important to make that more clear.
Yeah.
And that those moments, like, for example, I have a friend, Johan Harry. He wrote a book called Lost Connections.
Yes.
And he reached out to me after I wrote an article about masculinity. And he's been very supportive.
Yeah.
But there's something that I find incredible about him as a person. Is that through his own battle with depression, he's gone and researched it and found out that, medication aside, pretty much the root of, well, one could argue that the root of a lot of depression is a loss of connection, be that with a friend or friendship,
or with
art or with your career or with your family. But he himself does this thing of, when he is feeling like a loss of love or disconnection, he openly does the opposite.
Right.
Which I think is so, and I try and do that, and it's so powerful.
It's,
so he'll be like, "Oh, I feel a bit rubbish." So he'll be like, "Hey, like, how genuinely, like, how are you?" Or let me know about your, and he'll spread it.
It's one of the things I talk about on. I've talked about a few times is, if you are down, talking to a friend about it, it might feel like I'm being a burden or whatever else. It's like, because, I mean, 1 in 4 people suffer from depression or mental health issues at some point. So that means that they're probably gagging for someone to say, oh, I'm feeling this as well. A lot of the time it's going to be a relief. Do you think with boys, though, it's a relief?
Do you think that it is? Because I feel like sometimes there's an elephant in the room a bit.
No, that's what I mean. I think it would be a relief. I think if you're all not talking about it, one of you said, do you know what, I'm struggling at the moment, then it gives the other a chance who may not have had that feeling of connection to go, you know what, I am as well.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you brought that, rather than it being everyone sitting there thinking, I can't bring it up, it'll be a burden. It's like, if one of you brings it up, it's probably lightening a load for all of you.
I do think there is there's a thing I want to get at as well, which is sometimes it's triggering for other people and they put up more of a guard.
Yeah, I feel that.
And you feel as though someone opening up is reminding you of how you feel, and you're like, I need to shut that down. But that...
Yeah, it's interesting.
It has to start.
Again, I like that. I mean, this is one of many examples of it. I think the key is a wider dialogue on it all.
Yeah.
And just awareness that other people are going through it. I think with my boy Jay, if he had known other people, that most people of his age go through some kind of feelings of not knowing what your future is or where your place is or anything like that, then it might have, it might have given him that extra comfort to just, as I said, allow it, to live through it, to cope it, to find his way gradually, rather than go, I can't be dealing with this, I need to draw a line under it.
No, totally, I agree with that. What do you think your best period of mental well-being has been in your life?
I mean, it's mad because, as I was saying, I've had a recent wobble this year, but up until that, I'd say it's this last year or two.
Really?
Since I've got into the acting, my mental outlook on it all, the fact that I'm in no rush with any of it, the fact that I see it as something that I will be doing for years and years and years and getting better at, and the excitement of getting better rather than wanting everything now. I think in music in particular, there's an encouragement of, right, oh, we need a hit immediately. We need to be number one. Oh, we need to be here. I don't feel that with the way things are going in acting at the moment. It feels like it's going all right.
Yeah,
it's going crazy for a couple of years. Imagine how it's going to be in 10 years. Yeah. And not only from a career point of view, but from an ability point of view. 10 years of experience, 10 years of learning and getting better. It excites me. So the fact that the thing that breaks a lot of actors is auditions. And we've discussed this, how you'll go in and you'll really want a role and you feel you smashed it and then you don't get it. And it can break you or make you feel... I had a few years of auditions I got constantly, and then I've had a year of tons of auditions and I've not got any of them.
Yeah.
But at no point have I felt down about it. At all of them, I thought, I smashed that.
Yeah.
I've built a good relationship with that casting director. Or I've made a good impression on that producer, and I've not been right for this, but...
In the future.
It's all on for the future. So that feels like a really strong place mentally, because it's stuff that I can look at and go, I can see why people are... get down by that.
Yeah.
You've had 10 auditions in a week and none of them have come in, and you've felt they've all gone great, and you've started to make those plans that you shouldn't make of, right, well, I'll probably be filming that in October and I'll be in this part of the country and I can do, you know, no, you've not got the role, so you start to make, but
that's tough.
I've kind of had a good year on that, so it feels like this has been the best year mental health wise, because I can see where even maybe I would have previously tripped up. But it's
what would you say would be your worst in comparison, in contrast rather?
It will have been some of my touring days. Probably immediately springs to mind is mine and Dan Lesak's first big tour of America, because it was really hard. I struggled mentally. I wasn't enjoying it. I was enjoying the gigs. I wasn't enjoying any of the rest. But then I had the ridiculous guilt of the fact that, well, I'm touring America. That's everyone's dream. I can't complain about that. I can't say to my mates, oh, I'm struggling at the moment, because they'll be like, I work in a factory, mate.
Yeah.
What are you moaning to me for? So it was a weird one then, that I had a period where I drafted a letter to Dan Lesak to say, I'm leaving this. I'm getting out of music. Because it was that. It's that I remember when I had Billy Bragg on the podcast, he said he was dead lucky, because the thing that he sees that's hardest to reason and balance is when people achieve their dream and they're still not happy. That's darker than not achieving your dream. If you're not achieving your dream, like, there's always something to reach for. If you achieve it and you're like, oh,
well, purpose is such an integral part of being a human. I've had a writer's block for like months for rap specifically. And the other night at 10:27, I wrote, I was rich before I hit my 20s. Nowadays, I miss the desire of saving little pennies.
Yeah, man.
And it was it's that thing about purpose, isn't it? Where it's like, of course, I feel hugely grateful. And gratitude, as we've spoken about, it can completely change. Like, I'm looking forward to speaking to you in the morning. That was enough to push me out of something.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm hugely grateful for flat, dog, girlfriend, family, you know, friends. But sometimes in those moments where you feel up against it, is that weird paradox where it's like, it's still material, what I'm talking about. It's material, and the actual feeling of being like, I'm gonna go there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it. Those, that purpose and those desires are absolutely key. And then again, it is crushing if you achieve any of them. It's something that you've strived for so long, and it's not been this suddenly, it's all solved now.
It's just a thing. The
world's perfect. And that happens still with loads of stuff. Like, you'll get a particular gig or a particular acting role or a particular slot on a TV show, and you'll be like, this is it. And then it will happen and nothing changes.
Mate.
Like, it's great for that night, but nothing changes. You think it's going to be this life-changing experience. Nope. on continuing on to the next day, and that can be hard to get through.
Mate, it's wild.
Yeah.
Is there any? Have you already mentioned the things you do to look after your mental health? I think I did, but is there anything?
Yeah, no, not really. Yeah, I think it's allowing those things, and it goes contrast to some of the things that you touched upon, because just the I've realised that I'm not an Olympic athlete, Jordan. So if generally I'll be healthy or whatever, but if I want to eat a pizza and eat ice cream, I'll eat it and enjoy it and then not beat myself up about it afterwards, if you know what I mean. It's finding that kind of
Oh my god, sorry.
Or stopping myself. Oh no, you were saying about our health and fitness can be a positive thing, and I completely agree with that, but then also not, I think anything that you choose can become a damaging obsession as well.
100%.
So I got really into my fitness, and then I had a point where I was like anytime I'd be weak and have some pizza or whatever, I'd be like, oh man.
Oh, you'd be really, I've messed up.
It's
like, that.
No, it's fine. It's okay. It's okay to do that because you're still being healthy a lot of the time. And the fact is, again, you're not an Olympic athlete. Yeah. You don't have to be on it all the time constantly. You don't have to be in the best shape of anyone in the world. You just have to be in better physical and mental shape than you were
before, yeah.
Previously. Or, you know what I mean? And try and keep that balance, the physical and the mental.
It is all about balance because yeah. I know firsthand that health... Or your idea of health can often become quite unhealthy. Yeah.
And another one for me is cinema. I love the cinema. I love being in there. I love empty cinemas preferably.
Yeah, innit? Just watching a film on your own.
Just go in the daytime. I go on my own more than I go with other people.
Yeah, totally.
Easily. And cinema is somewhere where, no matter what mental state I'm in, if I can find a good film that's on, I'll go and eat the stuff I want to eat, and I'll watch a film, and I'll just be, yeah, alive in there.
And
not as an escape either, not as escape, as enriching my life. I've always had issue with, or not issue, it's not like a campaign of mine, but people often say, oh, I watch films to escape reality. I watch them to enrich my reality.
Of course.
To enhance my reality, not to escape. It's to go, right, this is, look at all the amazing things
that can happen. Who have you been speaking to that think that cinema is anti-reality?
Or people often say it's a campaign. It's an escape. It's like we go there to lose ourselves. It's like, no, I don't go there to lose myself.
Well, if you're watching Transformers, arguably.
yeah, exactly. but yeah, that's a good one for me. And films in general. I love films and TV. And again, it's the point I stopped beating myself up about taking some time off to watch stuff rather than going, well, I should be hustling.
You are seeming to be heading down a path I am trying to do too. Mm. I've definitely gone the other way in terms of like, you must work every day.
It's the balance, man. Because again, it's that weird thing of when you've got a boss, then you've got a start and an end point.
Yeah.
And when you're your own boss, you're going to be constantly on yourself with, I should be doing more work, I should be doing more. Whereas if you've got a boss, then you can go, I can relax now, I'm off work.
Yeah.
Whereas you never have that as your own boss.
Which is important to have that.
The relaxation is a guilt thing. It's like, no, it's not. It's part of your re-energising and re-inspiring.
Yeah. What would, musically, so film, massive mechanism of calm.
Yeah.
Which I agree with. Especially well-written stories, comedy and tragedy in equal amount. Also, sorry, quickly, what do you have popcorn-wise?
I'm not a popcorn guy.
Tacos. Tacos?
I have, and this is intense. This is going to be intense.
Oh my god, hit me. What is it?
I'll get my hot dog.
Right.
So I'm into a cinema hot dog.
What about if a cinema doesn't have a hot dog? What cinemas do you go to?
I just go to big, like, multi...
Odeon, Views.
Yeah, I don't go to all your Ponzi kind of Curzons and stuff like that.
You don't?
Yeah,
neither do I.
I ain't about it. so I'll get my hot dog, I'll get my big drink, but I won't put my straw in, because on top of my drink, I'm putting my Ben & Jerry's from the scoop stand. So that goes on there, so I can carry that and my ice cream. And my hot dog. So I've got drink, ice cream, hot dog. In my pocket is my sweets. So I've got a big... share bag of sweets.
Oh, you really go in?
And then I'm good to go. Look at that, all carried. I've got my straw in my pocket, so I'm a reusable straw I bring me everywhere because I'm a good guy. Yeah,
that's a great guy.
I've got a little metal one in my bag. Nice. And then, yeah, so I'm good to go. I can carry it all. I don't need anyone else.
And no popcorn.
I'm an independent woman.
Really?
I can do it all, yeah.
Love that. Ice cream on your bottle.
Just carry
ice
it.
Ice cream on my drink. I bought it. Okay, so music.
Yes.
If I'm like, yo, Scroob, you need to enjoy life right now. What song would you put on? Or what album?
I'd put on an album. It's my album of the year this year. Have you heard Tierra Whack, Whack World?
15 minutes.
It's amazing. It's 15 minutes long. It's 15 1-minute songs. Originally, I just saw the video and it's one 15 minute music video. It's amazing work of art. Yeah. And then it was just becoming obsessed with the fact that these are 1-minute songs that could have been
longer.
Pop bangers. Do you reckon they were? 3 minutes. I don't know. But it's, yeah, I love it. And I think, yeah, as a 15 minute piece, has its ups and downs. It has its bits of struggling and now.
Can we say
good.
That? Can we say this on a podcast now? I hope this. We'll make sure this makes an edit. If you haven't heard Tierra Whack, Whack World, look it up. You're so right. And my favorite bit in the video is the. Oh honey, I feel so sick, so sad.
Yeah, and the video's just smacking the balloons. Yeah, it's amazing.
It's very therapeutic.
Yeah,
actually, it's very therapeutic.
Yeah.
Brilliant choice.
And that's. I mean, that's a great. Track as well, because again, you then it seems like these throwaway pop songs. Then you get the intense or the hidden bits in it, and that song that's about it's called Fuck Off, and she's saying to an ex, "So I hope you're
whenever I'm happy, it makes you mad. You remind me of my deadbeat dad. Fuck off."
Yeah, and it was, but then she's got a line that she throws in there, just saying, "I wrote this because I felt 10 feet tall."
Yeah,
and that's just so powerful because it's not this bitter. I'm defeated. It's like she's. Been used and abused or whatever, and now she's like, fuck you, I'm a beast, I'm the best, I'm at top of my... It's not some moany kind of, oh, you got one over me. She's like, fuck off. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. I need that. I need a bit
whack
of that.
Whack world, yeah.
I need a bit of that whack world energy. If you're feeling a little bit against it, I mean, arguably you could also listen to whack world, but you know what I'm saying, though? Has there been a song that defines a particularly... difficult moment. There's some albums I can't listen to without being thrown back to like a relationship or something.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I'm not against a wallow. You know, I like if I'm feeling down or
I'm
feeling
not against
emotional.
A wallow. I love that.
To listen
that might
to
be
a,
my next album title.
That's the way. To listen. I mean, Saint Francis was a huge. He's now I get to release his stuff on my labels. Wow. He's my mate, but he was a huge influence on me because he was the first rapper I heard. Write about heartbreak and about struggling, and he had a song called Rewrite, and it was the first track I'd heard that was like, it showed vulnerability. It was rapping about vulnerability, and that's one that I've returned to a load of times to kind of to pick me up. I don't know. I guess it's a reminder that everyone's going through stuff. Everyone has been through stuff. So maybe Sage or something like that.
And I mean, you've already mentioned walking, but we have a thing called Whole Hour, which is, you know, take an hour out of your day.
Hang on, I've just had a, just this is going back now. I've just remembered on that tour where I was struggling, and then on ridiculous amount of tours afterwards, this is going to surprise you a little, but I repeatedly listened to the greatest hits of Cyndi Lauper. Because Cyndi Lauper is one of the best
True
pop writers.
Colors.
Just again, that's it. There's emotional ones. There's her vocal range is amazing.
Mark Rowe spoke about Cyndi Lauper, didn't she?
Lauper is the one, and she gets overlooked. And or people who aren't into Cyndi Lauper just think, "Oh, girls just want to have fun." It's all right. That's not in
You're
my top five
Cyndi
Lauper songs.
Mad deep,
she's amazing, and she's
as if Cyndi Lauper's got two massive shouts on this podcast. That's actually,
mate.
We need to do something. Cyndi Lauper, guys?
Prince wrote a song for Cyndi Lauper. If Prince respects someone, I'm into it.
Yeah,
and Cyndi was respected by the great Prince. So
yeah,
it's the way. Anyway, sorry, I derailed the.
No, I loved that. You didn't derail.
Just remembered. I was like, oh, Cyndi Lauper, obviously.
I think we need to. I think I'm just going to add on to this list of questions. Do you like Cyndi Lauper?
Yeah, do. Just check.
Okay, listen. What I really want to get from you before we finish this, I feel like there's things you want to say. Just from that perspective, what advice would you give? You've mentioned it in various points throughout the podcast, but just straight up, you know, as coming from someone who has a tangible battle, in inverted commas, being a speech impediment or whatever else, and then more so with you take on a lot, mate. You run.
Do a fair bit.
Yeah. So like what would a motivating advice say to someone who's a bit against it, has dreams, has desires, but doesn't know how to.
I mean it's tough. On I don't even know where to just.
That's a lot actually, I'm giving you to say. You have said
to
it.
To start, right? Yeah. On the handling all of it and the coping with all of the pressures, it sounds so basic or stripped down to just say allow it. Like, and I think that translates constantly. Like the thing that made my breakthrough with my stutter was just saying it's all right. I'll stutter then, rather than trying to figure out how not to. I just will.
Yeah.
And similar with if I'm feeling down, again within reason, it's like that's all right.
Yeah.
Or if anxiety gets the better of me, it's like it's all right. I won't do what that's making. You know, it's good to push past these things, but at some points, it's good to go. All right. Well, my anxiety doesn't want me to do that, so I won't. You know, it's finding these things and just allowing it.
And go for a walk.
Yeah, just go for a walk. Partially naked.
Oh, it's great, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. If you would like to subscribe to our podcast, please click subscribe and look after yourselves.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Powered by Spirit Studios.